We the Reefers is brought to you by Bulk Reef. Just kidding. How's it going, Reef Keepers? As you know, this podcast is brought to you by my college teaching salary as an adjunct, which means, under 50 grand a year. And I'm producing this on an iPhone, but I did just upgrade the microphone system. I hope that this is an upgrade. You guys let me know if the standard microphone on an iPhone sounds better to you, like in previous episodes, or whether this, you know, $80 microphone system I picked up actually helps things. Hopefully this is good. Hopefully it, you know, cancels out a little bit of echo or whatnot. I tested it out a couple times myself, and I couldn't really tell over iPhone speakers, so I'm sure some of you have better speakers, and you can advise me. I'll return it if you guys prefer just standard iPhone speakers. But anyway, hello. Hope you're having a good week. I today was going to bring you an episode about reef tank planning, and I've been planning this episode. I'm planning for a long time. I know you guys have been patient with it. I've mentioned it before. I put out a question, you know, request for it. I'm sure Dusk, who's, you know, kind of a shadow collaborator with me, you know, one of my channel subscribers, who is far and away a better reef tank planner than I am or ever will be. I'm sure he's been waiting as well. He's not pressuring me or anything, but he gave me a ton of resources to study. I have studied them. I have notes for them, but I kind of did an about face and decided that with this episode, I'm going to talk about reef tank disaster mitigation as opposed to the planning episode I was going to go ahead with. That's for a specific reason. Right now, and I'll get into it, but if you want to just pause and go check it out because it's so compelling and you know a little bit about battery backup, there's a sale going on, and I don't know how long it will go on. It's happening, you know, right now today, the day this episode is going to be published. The company EcoFlow, not EcoTech, EcoFlow. We're going to talk about, you know, EcoTech versus EcoFlow battery backups later. But EcoFlow is running a special on the certified refurbished version of their EcoFlow River 2 backup battery unit, which has a lithium iron phosphate battery inside of it. They're running this through their official store on eBay. It is, the unit is $115 delivered, which is pretty phenomenal for that technology. We'll get into it deeper, right? But if anybody's seen like my previous videos on this unit or knows about battery technology and they hear that and go, oh my gosh, like run over there and get it now. Come back to the podcast after, because I'm going to get into a whole bunch of different elements of reef tank disaster mitigation today. And I have to say up front, because one thing I want to do for you guys is never try to be something I'm not. I am not some expert in this area, right? I'm really not an expert in any area. I'm like a regular reef keeper who just tries to look at and become an amateur study on various pieces of reef keeping so that I can speak about it in broad terms, or like how it impacts me or how I've implemented things or what I've experienced, and then bring you guys in on that conversation. I'm not a biologist. I'm not an electrician. I'm not an anything. So if you guys have like, you know, deep level questions after you hear a whole bunch of the stuff in this podcast, I mean, you can ask me, but it's pretty likely I'm going to, you know, just ping that question off of somebody like Telegram and then get back to you. There are people who are much more qualified to talk about this kind of stuff than I am. But since I do have this podcast and you guys seem to like to listen to me, let's get into it with reef tank disaster mitigation. So reef tank disaster mitigation, I'll just start, like, I'll give you my journey in this. So like my journey in reef tank disaster mitigation until pretty recently basically consisted of like airstones on battery operated, like lithium battery operated airstone units, right? So like, you know, you'd have the little battery pack with an on off switch on it connected to an airline hose that had a, you know, little airstone at the end of it. And I must have half a dozen of these things laying around. And until, I don't know, some months back, when I upgraded to like a traditional lead acid UPS, which by the way is now gone. I'll get into what I've got now. Some of you already know. Basically, I learned about the airstone trick, which is not really a trick. It's just kind of a cheap way to have something on hand that you could address a power outage with. I learned about that back when I only had nano tanks. And if you only have a nano tank, an airstone with a decent sized battery pack connected to it, that's really not the worst way to go. I know that that catches some flack from like, people who have major disaster mitigation systems set up. But if you have a small tank, it's honestly like having an airstone that you can just drop in the water and keep things moving and, keep some surface tension roiling and, pump bubbles into the water. I mean, of course, it depends on the size. Probably like, we're talking like 20 gallons or under. But, if that's what you got, it is, I believe, better than nothing, right? However, after I moved to the deep south, we had a couple close misses on the edge of our city, our little rural city that I live in, by tornadoes. And then we had one incident which really brought into focus the need for me to have a better, like, backup solution. So that incident, tornadoes are no fun, of course, even near misses. But the solution that really, or the incident that really catalyzed me getting more into disaster mitigation for my reef tank was, well, we live, I'll give you a little backstory. We live on a side of my, on the side of my city that is experiencing like the residential boom. So we got like, condos and townhouses and regular houses and everything, everywhere that anybody is going to live in this town in the future is happening, right around where I live. Okay. So that means, along with obnoxious heavy construction equipment, super early, noises of jackhammers in the mornings and everything, congestion on the roads. It also means that there are going to be mistakes made by construction crews with pre-existing infrastructure that is, hidden or whatever. And one of those mistakes happened a few months back when, some piece of heavy machinery, some operator was operating heavy machinery, dug down into the ground. I don't know how the guy survived. I'm sure somebody else knows more about this, but basically, the guy severed completely one of the main electrical arteries running all through this area of development on this whole side of this little city that I live in. And from the spot that he severed that line, all everything beyond it was just blackout instantly. So like, boom, everything went out. We were at home. I walk outside and I look around, and our neighborhood kind of sits up on a hill, so I can see a couple other neighborhoods, and like I could see the glow of like the heart of town on the horizon, but like everything else was just black, and I was like, okay, this is probably not good. So I came back inside, put the air stones in my tank, right? And I'm like, okay, I've had these air stones for a couple of years, these battery packs with air stones connected to them, and they're lithium, so they do degrade, and I have no idea how long I'm gonna get off of these things, right? And I'm panicking. By the way, it has to be mentioned that if you have a family or a spouse, kids, whatever, when the power goes out and it's like out for a wide region, it's often not the greatest concern of your spouse. Like your aquarium is not their greatest concern. So here I am, like my family's alive. It is, kind of scary because it's like everything's pitch black. The house is already getting cold and everything because it was, a colder period of the year, and the furnace couldn't turn on because there was no electrical connection. And I'm like, oh my God, what do I do for this tank? Should I wrap it in blankets? Should I, what should I do? I'm like looking in the tank with a flashlight. And you can't ignore the fact that like your spouse's main concern is not going to be that tank. Your spouse is going to be like, hey, dude, your little kid is scared. What are you doing shining a flashlight into an aquarium? And by the way, they're not wrong in that thinking. Like, you know, in your mind, your family's fine, they're breathing, they're good. You got to get the tank squared away and then you can focus on other things. It's much, much, much better to have the tank be the secondary, you know, the secondary thing that you can go to later on. Once you get everything set up with your family and you turn on the emergency lanterns and, you know, you get a snack in the kid and like all that kind of stuff. That's the time that you can then turn to your tank, which should already be operating under its own emergency plan, and go, okay, how's my emergency plan going? How's everything doing in here? That is the ideal situation. So it was kind of a, you know, when I was pulled two different directions, like trying to, you know, make sure that my family was squared away, also obsessing about the tank, not knowing how long those air stones were going to last. I'm like refreshing the update feed from my power company, which is a great power company. It's literally just services this one small city. And they actually got the power back on in like 3 hours flat, which for a major artery disconnect, which they described the problem. They were open with people. They said, we have no idea when it's coming back on, which was terrifying. They did get it back on in 3 hours. But immediately after, I was like, okay, I need something else. I can't just survive with these airstone units. So started poking around and I'm like, you know, I don't have Vortex. I'm not going to, you know, get the Ecotec backup battery. I was already kind of trying to shy away from, you know, supporting some of these companies. And I was like, okay, you know, what next? What else? And for the price point that I could afford, I was like, there's really not that much else. And so I settled on like a, you know, I forget what it was, $60 or $70 UPS backup battery unit, which is like for a laptop or a modem or whatever. And I found that that would run my pumps for like 4 or 5 hours, which was better than the 3 hour outage. And I figure since my power company is actually really good, this should cover me. But again, like in the back of your head, you're like, if a tornado hit this town, which again, it's the deep south, it could happen. If a tornado took down a bunch of energy infrastructure, you know in your heart of hearts it's going to be longer than 4 or 5 hours. So I had this unit running for a while, and then, you know, I just kind of following along with the reef keeping world, I had heard, you know, tell of people who have lithium iron phosphate battery backup systems installed for their reef tanks. And that to me, after I learned a little more about it, was like the dream. The barrier to achieving that backup battery dream was that the cost was like insane for me because from all that I could hear described on like podcasts and videos and stuff like that, you had to get like, and by the way, I'm not like Mr. DIY electrical dude. Electricity makes me nervous. And it really seemed like everything I would watch on lithium iron phosphate, it was like, okay, you have to take a lithium iron phosphate battery pack, like it looks like a car battery, you know? And then you have to like, you know, wire onto it with your own wiring and then wire it to like a control box that regulates something. And like, by the way, I was already like lost and given up on that option the second the solution included me connecting a wire to the battery. I have no shame admitting that. I just like, I'll DIY like other little stuff, like a calc reactor all day. But if you're asking me to like connect electrical wiring, like, you know, and no, I'm not doing it. Okay. Even like the Tune safety connector, every video I ever watched on that with regards to backup batteries, like connecting it to a car battery or whatever. All these people are like, oh, you know, I was scared too, and it's easy. And I'm just like, no, I'm not doing it. So I wanted like a proper solution, like a plug and play solution. That's what I trusted electrically. And it didn't exist to my knowledge yet. However, I caught a Telegram post, I don't know, a few weeks ago now. And he was like, hey, look at this. It's by this company called EcoFlow. Okay. And it is a lithium iron phosphate power station. And it's literally designed to operate as a backup, as like a UPS backup battery unit, meaning when the power goes off, The EcoFlow, it's called the EcoFlow River 2, mind you. They have several different models. This is like the base model. When the power goes off, the EcoFlow kicks on, and whatever's plugged into it just keeps powering it. Even if the EcoFlow unit completely powers off, like it runs out of battery, it completely discharges. When power's reconnected to it from your wall or whatever, it then will power itself back on and continue doing what it was doing before. So you don't need to reset anything. And it has a lithium iron phosphate battery inside of it. So for all those who don't know, here's, and by the way, this is all like, hopefully I'm not wrong on any of this. This is still like outside my wheelhouse, but this is what I understand. Lithium iron phosphate battery technology is a battery technology that you can cycle consistently for up to 10 years, an entire decade. And with regular cycling over the course of an entire decade, that battery will only be reduced to like 80% of its original charge capacity. I'll say that again. 10 years of cycling, a lithium iron phosphate battery will literally still retain 80% of its original charge capacity. And at the time, the deal on the unit was like, I forget, like $229 brand new, which is what I went with. But then this EcoFlow company, they run an official store on eBay, and they had certified refurbished units that they posted on eBay. And at the time, I think they were like $135. Right now, today, they've put up another sale of the very same unit. They're $115. So, lithium iron phosphate, this solution versus Ecotec Marine's very best, like the reefing industry's gold standard battery backup unit. Here's the difference. The Ecotec Marine unit, the Vortec battery backup, one, it's incredibly heavy. The EcoFlow is like 7.5 pounds. It's metal. By the way, I dropped one of those. The corner of it hit my foot one time, like the side of my foot. Yeah, that wasn't very fun. The battery technology inside of an Ecotec Marine battery is lead acid. So traditional lead acid battery technology, it declines in capacity precipitously year over year, precipitously. So Reef Dork on his Reef Dork Extra channel recently pushed a like lithium backup battery unit for $75. That's like a 27,000 milliamp hour, I think it was. And it lasted like somewhere in the neighborhood of like 26 to 34 hours, and depending on his testing. And his Ecotec Marine battery backup with lead acid battery technology inside of it, which is only 3 years old, they bill that unit as being able to go for 24 hours, like it can run Vortex for 24 hours. It only ran his Vortex for 6 hours. So that's the kind of like decline in battery life, in battery capacity terms, that you can see, like, oh, that you can expect over the course of 3 years with a lead acid battery solution. Like, it's the difference between lithium iron phosphate and lead acid. It is night and day when you're talking about battery capacity over time. So even if you bought it brand new, the $229 that you're going to spend on the EcoFlow River 2, which by the way, can run Vortec pumps. You buy a $10 adapter and plug it into the DC socket on it. It's got a DC socket and an AC socket. When you plug that adapter into the DC side, you can just jack right into the control box of your Vortec pump. It will run it the same length of time as a brand new Ecotec backup battery. And again, over the course of 10 years on the EcoFlow River 2 unit with a lithium iron phosphate battery, you're only losing 20% of your capacity. You will still have 80% of its total starting battery capacity left. which is phenomenal. And it really, at a cost of $215 a pop, I mean, the battery that's inside the Ecotec Marine unit is literally the same battery that they pop on a basic wheelchair setup. I mean, it is a wheelchair battery that they're selling to you in metal housing for $215. By the way, these lithium iron phosphate power stations, I'll call them, because that's what they call them. Like, EcoFlow is far from the only ones that have recently debuted this, to the mass consumer market. If any of you are familiar with like Anker, they've like Anker, Anker. It's a brand you can find on Amazon. They have these too, and they run periodic sales on them too. Lithium iron phosphate inside, functioning as UPS backup batteries. Like, it to me, having 10 years of longevity like that versus having to replace my Ecotec Marine backup battery unit in like 3 years to feel good about having my pumps run. Yeah, it's like not a question to me. And frankly, I mean, you guys know how I feel about Aperture, but frankly, that's just appalling and unacceptable and weak, right? Like, either upgrade your unit, guys, to a lithium iron phosphate battery inside, or lower the price. $215 for something that you're gonna reasonably need to replace in 3 years. That's terrible. It's absolutely terrible and not justifiable. So the backup battery unit that I've got, this EcoFlow River 2, that achieved my 2024 goal, which was to get a reliable battery backup unit that was more serious than that little, $70 UPS unit that I had on my tank. So that was like, I mean, I achieved my goal, like, I don't know, in February or whenever I bought this. So from there, now there's a whole different world of disaster mitigation that's been opened up to me, because at least on the EcoFlow unit, I can't speak to other, power station, lithium iron phosphate power station companies. But on this EcoFlow unit, you have a solar hookup in the back, and EcoFlow makes 100 watt solar panels. So I bought a pair of 100 watt solar panels on sale from their eBay store, the EcoFlow eBay store, for $149. 200 watt panels, right? And I can connect those. Now, there's two ways that you can connect solar power. It's like in series or in parallel. Yeah, I think those are two ways. It's either in series or in parallel. I can connect both of them to this EcoFlow River 2 base battery unit. So I have those waiting. I have the cordage to run. I got to wait till my wife and kid are out of town and I can have a whole weekend to dink around with it and watch YouTube videos on the installation and, get frustrated and, curse myself out and they're not around to hear it, that kind of thing. But I will get those installed. So I will actually have the ability to like trickle solar charge this unit in case there is like a much longer power outage, right? And I live in Mississippi and the back of my house faces south with very little obstruction. So it'll be a great solar situation for me, because that's what you want, from what I understand at least. Facing south is best for solar. So my whole point in telling you this whole story up to date of where I am is, for like $115, you like considering that there's lithium, considering how lithium iron phosphate batteries work, considering the fact that in 10 years you're going to have 80% of that original charge left, buying something certified refurbished in this case means something different, right? It's not like you're buying, like if you bought a used Ecotec Marine battery backup, you might have 4 hours of battery life left on that thing. If it ran for 3 or 4 years, it might be a terrible purchase. You buy it for half price and you get like, a fraction of the original charge capacity left in it. But with lithium iron phosphate, especially coming from a manufacturer's own certified refurbished store, I'm guessing that you're going to have at least 80-90% of that original battery capacity in it, at least, if not close to 100. So for $115, you're getting almost the entire way to a new product. You see what I mean? So like for $115, you can literally have like the setup that I paid like double that for. And by the way, that's $115 delivered. It's free delivery. So this is a unique opportunity, and it's why I wanted to do this particular podcast today. But like as things currently stand, since I don't have my solar installed, if you guys go look at my channel and see my videos that I put out on the EcoFlow unit, just understand you can have that unit and 10 years of banking on your battery working for you with good capacity for literally $115 free delivered. So that's enough on backup battery. By the way, that's about all I know about backup battery. On my one last, I guess, notable mention for backup battery is that on one of my nano tanks, on my Fluval Evo 13.5, I still have a Airstone connected to a battery that automatically turns on. It's just an Airstone battery. But on my 25-gallon nano tank, I put a video on my channel as well for an SKE, which is Smart Key Energy, I want to say, is the company. An SKE backup battery unit. That is this tiny little thing that like fits in the palm of your hand, and it's a lithium unit. So like, whatever, every 3 to 5 years, you're going to want to replace that because lithium does also degrade just like lead acid. But it has a little USB jack on it. And I just have like a 5-watt little Chinese return pump as an auxiliary return pump in that nano tank. I put that little auxiliary pump next to the main pump, jacked it into the little lithium backup battery unit. That backup battery unit ran for, I'm trying to remember what I said in the video now. It was 8 or 9 hours, but like I got like 8 or 9 hours on a 5-watt little Chinese return pump, just plugged in via USB into a $49 battery unit. That backup battery is $49, right? The Reef Dork one is an even better deal. It's $75. I forget what it's called. You'll have to look at his Reef Dork Extra channel. It's his latest video. But for $75, it's 27,000 milliamp hours, I'm pretty sure. That thing runs as long as a brand new, like brand new, it will run as long as a brand new Ecotec Marine backup battery unit, depending on the pump you hook up to it, of course. The longevity of your pump that you connect to it is all dependent upon the power draw and intensity of your pump. So anyway, the long story short here is there are too many good options that have now hit the consumer market in recent weeks, months, the last couple years to justify paying $215 every 3 years to Aperture for a wheelchair battery. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it's every day that they keep that thing on the market at that price point is just further proof of how hard Ecotec Marine, Bulk Reef Supply, the whole Neptune, Aperture, their whole machine, it's just further proof of how they are trying to screw over the average reefer, right? It's unjustifiable. So I'll get off that point, but that's how I feel about it. So, all right, moving out of backup batteries and Airstones and things that are battery powered, right? You've got the next step up from there. And I think most of us normal reef keepers, this is a thing that we don't have, right? And by the way, I don't have one, but the neighbor behind me has one. He actually has two of these things. Generators, right? So he's got like two little Honda generators. He had one of them that was like for some property that he owned, and then he sold that property. And like, so he's got two of them in his garage, and he's like, anytime you need to use it. So I do have like a longer term backup option for me, a disaster mitigation power option for me. But if you don't have like a neighbor or family member like that's close by that you can get one of these generators from, I would say like a long-term goal for you should probably be to get some kind of gas-powered generator, right? I don't know that much about gas-powered generators. I know that this little Honda model that he's got is incredibly popular. incredibly popular. I looked it up online. It's super highly rated. I forget how much it was when I looked it up. Like, I think there were some, of course, they make a whole bunch of different ones that, have different power outputs and stuff, but I think it was like $1,200, I want to say, maybe more, maybe 1,500 or something like that. But from what I've just kind of like, Googled around and looked at, for a grand, you can get a pretty solid generator that will run various pieces of equipment on your tank for quite a while on generator power. And I think even when I typed in like emergency generator on AliExpress, now again, I don't know. I can't vouch for like how good any of these units are, but I saw some like $300 units that are like Chinese generators on AliExpress. That, like, I don't know. I mean, they seem to have good ratings, right? And they seem to have, decent power output. So I don't know. I know, I think Telegram recently posted, like a few days back, a backup battery unit if you want to look at one that's like in the affordability range, that he recommends, because I generally trust the stuff that, he's used and, or at least researched. That's never really steered me wrong, but yeah, the next option is like some kind of generator. And by the way, for those of you who are like high income earners, I'm sure that those people already know about this, but like you can even get whole home generators, right? Like this company Generac, I think, is the company that is really popular in like upper crust neighborhoods. People will get Generac units installed that are so good that when the power goes out, they don't even notice that the power's gone out. It just their Generac units power on and just keep powering their entire home, and they may never even know that the power's gone out in their region because it's restored before, the Generac unit runs out. So there's all kinds of high-end options that are like way outside of my range that you can look into for like whole home power and like, I don't know, just like serious generator power beyond like a little Honda, garage unit that like the guy across the street has. But yeah, I mean, like if you want to go there, and I would say like when you get to a certain point in reef keeping with like a certain size tank and a certain investment in fish and coral and stuff like that, I think it kind of becomes logical. It kind of becomes logical to look at it a bigger solution than like something that's just going to run my pumps. Because what you stand to lose if, God forbid, the power's out for days and days and days, like there's like a Texas power disaster, like what happened down there a few years ago, it could, cripple you at least emotionally. And really hurt you financially to lose everything that you built at a certain point. And so at a certain point, yeah, people who are playing the game at that level, like, a serious generator or even a whole home system probably becomes pretty logical, I would imagine. So like, I wonder what's the Polo Reef guy, Andrew Sandler? Like, you better believe that guy's got some serious backup power. Hey, I would love to see just his like backup, situation. Like, it's got to be absolutely crazy. So, all right, beyond generators, stuff that, and by the way, when I say disaster mitigation, I started with backup battery stuff. It's not really the order I would have gone in, but because the episode happened, this episode's happening. This topic is happening due to the sale of that EcoFlow unit and me wanting to, basically tell people about it and let them know that they have this great option. I started there, but really where I would have started is even smaller than all of this. So like I started with like consumer grade, like run one or two powerhead, lithium iron phosphate battery. And then I've gone all the way up to whole home generation and touched on that. But I'm gonna kind of like go way back, even behind all that, and talk about disasters that could happen that may not, like, I mean, these are not like necessarily power related disasters, right? Like, disaster mitigation is a multifaceted thing. There are other kinds of disasters that can happen. All of our greatest nightmare is that the power just goes out and doesn't come back on, and everything dies as we watch it die in the tank, right? That's like the nightmare that comes to mind, at least for me, when somebody says, you know, not that anybody's ever asked me this. Nobody cares to ask these questions except reef keepers. But like, you know, are you scared? What's the thing that scares you the most? I'm like, the power going out and never coming back on. There are other things. So like, what about your tank starts to leak, right? I'm not going to get into like the Red Sea drama, but like tank leaks, seam splits, problems, you know, with the panes of glass staying where they should be, and, you know, function, and the silicone functioning as it should. That all is pretty prevalent on people's minds at this point in time as well, especially like Red Sea people. So leak detection, just basic leak detection. And by the way, I am not one of those guys that's like, you know, we're in 2024 and everybody should have some form of aquarium controller. I still don't think you need an aquarium controller. What I do think you cannot ignore is that there are products for very, very cheap, super cost-effective products on the market, on the likes of AliExpress or Amazon, that you can get that will mitigate disaster in your reef tank, right? So like leaks, for example, you ever look up just like a Wi-Fi leak detector on Amazon? You can get like a Wi-Fi leak detector that has one or two sensor nodes that you put on the floor. Maybe they're usually, I think, battery operated, but some of them are, you know, ones that you can just plug into an outlet, and they just sit on the floor. And usually there's some kind of base station. Sometimes it's a little all-in-one unit, but for like 40, 50, 60 bucks, you can have a unit that will start to, you know, beep like a smoke detector if water gets under it, and will instantly start sending notifications to your phone. That, like, no matter how old school of a reef keeper you get, because there are some old school reef keepers who are just like, no to aquarium controllers. I am the aquarium controller, right? I respect that. I understand that. I respect people who don't trust their, you know, auto water testing units to dial in their dosing for them. Like, I get it. But you have to have something in place should, for instance, water start getting on the floor. Either a line popped off somewhere or something cracked, or your tank seams are giving. If there's water on the floor, if you're not home, nobody else is home, and you're getting, you know, urgent water on the floor alerts, like, I mean, you want to know that's happening, guys. You absolutely want to know that's happening. And I just don't think that there's an excuse at this point in time, even if you hate, like, electronics and the thought of an aquarium controller and all that, you're resistant to all that. I just don't see the excuse to not have some form of leak detection that has your back, right? Like, have your own back that much. Let's see here. I guess we talk about aquarium controllers in conjunction with that. So, like, I'm an aquarium controller guy because I'm a gear nut, right? I don't by any means think that an aquarium controller is necessary to have success in this hobby, like, at all, nowhere near. However, I am a controller guy because that's just me. And as you guys probably know, I have, like, you know, a bells and whistles Neptune system. Like, everything from water testing to leak detection to level sensors to, you know, I have modules I don't use, moonlight modules, and, you know, oh, there's just so much that I've spent on all of my Neptune Apex gear, Neptune Systems gear, rather. And to be honest with you, I'm pretty critical of the build quality of all of it. And I'm very critical of a lot of things going on with the company. So, you know, I don't actively recommend Neptune to people. But, you know, that doesn't change the fact that the software is, by and large, pretty easy to use. The products, at least until you get them in your hand and you feel how cheap and plasticky they are, they do look good. And a lot of reefers do just drift toward them because, like, there is, at least in America, a really big support community behind Neptune that can always, like, answer questions, troubleshoot stuff with you, and help you out. So, like, in that way, so I think there are a lot of reefers who go the controller route, who look at Neptune and they're like, okay, like, there's enough of a, full picture there to have enticed me in. I'm gonna go that route, which, whatever. You've got Hydros as an option, which this is one of my serious weak points in gear, guys. I don't know that much about Hydros. I know they just came out with a new product, and a lot of people were really excited for that. So it seems compelling, right? And then you've got GHL, of course, which I don't know how much it costs in Europe compared to like Neptune or Hydros. But in America, GHL is like a touch more expensive. So, however, the build quality of GHL is, I mean, unrivaled in comparison. So like you can't, it's almost not comparable. I mean, it is because they're both controller systems, but it's crazy that they're both controller systems when you look at like the build quality of a GHL product versus a Neptune, like modern era Neptune product. They used to make this stuff better. But yeah, it's a different ball game. If you decide to go GHL as far as product quality is concerned. Just watch some videos on it. It's wild. So anyway, aquarium controllers give you all these leak detection options, right? You can create all kinds of programs to have all kinds of fail-safe mechanisms occur. So like leak is detected, switch off the skimmer in case it's the skimmer that's overflowing, right? Switch off the reactor in case the top of the reactor popped off and somehow it fell over and it's gushing water on the floor. Depending on the location of the leak sensor, turn off the return pump, right? Or like turn the return pump way down low and slowly ramp it up and see if more leak warnings happen. Like you can have stuff that tracks all of this and goes through this whole like, if then, I forget what it's if then when, kind of like logic pattern, right? All of that, in my unesteemed opinion, in my gear nut world, all of that is really, really alluring. Like I have all kinds of little fail-safe patterns set up across all of the various pieces of my gear. Like, and I'm always tinkering with it. I'm always testing it and tinkering with it. Other things, thinking of equipment-wise. Oh, by the way, how about just like a backup return pump, right? Even on that 25-gallon nano tank, I've literally got like a little, like I described earlier, a little 5-watt Chinese backup return pump connected to one set of outlets, and then like a normal, like more powerful return pump connected to the other pair of outlets. Even on like a 25-gallon tank. I mean, it's like, I think that was a $30 5-watt Chinese return pump. Why not? What if one of them goes down? What if a snail gets lodged in one of them? What if anything, it just fails, the control box shorts out or whatever. Like, you want something backing your system up. So, like, on the system in front of you, I've got a Core 15 as the primary return pump, but I have the return line, it like forks into two as it comes down into the sump, and the Neptune Core 15 return pump is connected to one side of the fork, and then the other side of the fork is just a Jibao. I just have like a, what is it, DCP 2000, 3000, 4000, something in that range, whatever. I just found like the most reliable basic Jibao pump. That return pump that was like comparable in strength to the Core 15, and I just set them side by side. Like it's a tight fit, but why would you not have that? If there's an error with the Core 15 that's detected, if there's a power loss to the Core 15, if the water level rises to a certain point in the sump, because obviously the Core 15 has stopped functioning, all of those things send a signal to my controller to activate the outlet that the Jibao emergency pump is connected to, and bam, it'll instantly turn on the Jibao return pump and keep the process of the water cycling through the tank, through the sump going. So there, I mean, like, I'm sure that there are products and like smart power strips that have like functionalities where you can do some, deeper programming. I wouldn't know them. I use smart power strips just like for on off and timers and stuff like that. But I'm sure other people know how to program some of this stuff, and there are certain products that are built for that kind of programming where you could conceivably do this without a controller. But part of the reason that I like the controller is that there's this whole community that's like, hey, check out this wild program that turns this off, and this off, and this on in the event that this happens. I'm all over that kind of thing. And I think that that does actually like enhance your ability to, it enhances your system's ability to respond to a potential disaster and head it off, right? Or at least, again, mitigate it. Like, you may, your controller may enable you to mitigate a complete disaster and make it a minor disaster, right? Which is, it's far better than a total loss on the system, right? So, yeah, I'm an advocate of aquarium controllers, but I absolutely full stop before getting to the point of saying aquarium controllers are necessary for everyone. They're not. So, other random things that I thought about, extra salt. Have extra salt. I get nervous when I get down to my last bucket of salt, right? I buy 200 gallon, like 200 gallons worth of salt, like it could make 200 gallons at a time. And I buy it, it comes in a cardboard box in a bag that I can then dump into a salt bucket. So I've got this like salt bucket that I can reseal, and it makes me nervous if I don't have another box of salt waiting to be like processed into the salt bucket once I've emptied the salt bucket. So I always make sure, like, oh, if I run out of salt in the salt bucket and refill it with the boxed salt that I have waiting, and now my box of salt is gone, the very next paycheck I buy salt. It like goes to the top of my list because think about it. What if something contaminated your water horribly, right? What if there was some like, I mean, I don't know how strong certain elements of RODI units are, and everybody has different RODI units, different stages, different strengths of medias, different everything. What if some kind of horrible thing got leached into the water supply and got into your tank and started killing things? What if, I don't know, what if your kid, grabbed some kind of, I don't know, cooking oil or something off the counter and is dumping it in your tank behind your back while you're trying to make dinner? Who knows, right? Like, again, anything. By the way, what if your tank seam splits and half the water in your tank drains out and you're desperately trying to ferry everything over into a new system, but there's not enough water? You have to have a way to make more salt water, is my point, right? I think everyone should always have a little more salt than they reasonably need. And salt's not cheap, but it's not a back-breaking expense either. So it's hard for me to come up with like a reason to not have like more salt than you would need on hand, right? Also, how about just like tubs? Okay, if you don't have like an auxiliary tank that's just like waiting to have water and creatures dumped into it in case of an emergency, I would think that like some large, clear, cheap plastic tubs, yeah, pretty important. That having those on hand has been useful to me a couple of different times. And it was actually really useful just to have them waiting in the wings when I moved across the country. Like I was like, okay, I know where I'm going to put my creatures as I move across the country. I've got these like, 20, 30, 40 gallon tubs that I can put everything in with, heaters and live rock and stuff. So, it never hurts to have too many storage tubs around, right? Get some heavy duty storage tub, just a couple of them, just to give you the option, the flexibility of having like a portable thing that you can drag in and like work with if there is an emergency. And then also just like having a spare heater, right? I can't believe the amount of horror stories that I've heard in this hobby about like, oh my God, my heater went out in my tank and for whatever reason, they couldn't heat their house hot enough to get the tank warmed up. And now they're driving like four towns away to the one 24-hour Walmart in their region to try to buy some Fluval heater, and all they have is like beta tank heaters. You know, like I've seriously heard horror stories about heaters like that. And probably, you know, those stories happened, you know, back in the day. I think some of that's just been solved by like, you know, the general proliferation of business and longer hours and, you know, the growth of society. But like, you know, I have heard stories mostly from older reef keepers about these like equipment panics. And yeah, I mean, like you can't wait for 2-day Amazon shipping to get a heater back on your tank. You're gonna have to find a heater. So heaters aren't expensive, you know. Get an extra heater. Just have it sitting in the box on a shelf. Same thing with like a wave maker. Like even if it's a small wave maker, even if it's a $60 Jabao SLW 20, right? Or a $45 Jabao SLW 10. Have something that can move water in case all your other wave makers for some reason short out or aren't enough or whatever. Yeah, stuff like that, you know, just have one more of everything. Like I have one extra pump for my skimmer. Not that a skimmer going down is going to mean the tank dies tomorrow or anything like that, but you know, I've got an extra return pump. I've got an extra pump for my skimmer. I've got all this extra salt. I've got tubs. You know, heaters, what have you, all these things that I've gone through, I have them, much to my wife's annoyance, waiting up high on shelves in the garage, and I can press these things into action whenever I need to, and it gives me peace of mind. So like between all that extra stuff that I've got on hand in case anything fails or goes wrong, and then I've got you know, an aquarium controller with all kinds of fail-safe programs built into it. Okay. I've got leak detection as part of the controller, but like, you know, if you don't have a controller, have leak detection of some kind. Have at least one electronic sensor down at the base of your tank or underneath your cabinet, something. And then my backup battery system, this EcoFlow River 2 lithium iron phosphate battery unit that I've got. Between those primary like things, I feel reasonably good. I'm still paranoid. By nature, I'm a little bit of a paranoid guy. I have like, you know, I'm ready, man. If something goes wrong with this tank, I want to be able to respond. I think about it all the time. So, but I think I'm pretty decently covered. Of course, the dream would be like a whole home generator, you know, but like I'm not going to get there. So I'm doing all I can up to that point, and soon I will even have solar. Which for $149, two 100-watt solar panels that I can connect to this River 2 power station, I couldn't beat it. I was like, I gotta pull the trigger on this. Like, there was the other stuff I wanted to buy for my tank that month, but I was like, I can't, this is too good of a deal. Even if you have one 100-watt panel, that's better than nothing, right? Especially if you've got an affordable backup battery unit that can take a solar plug right directly into the back of it. So. Yeah, guys, like it's interesting. Like, there's so many other things that I could say, like knowing a reefer in your region who could potentially like take fish and coral for you. Like, that's one reason why it's good to like network out and meet other reefers and have these kind of options, or like get close to your local fish store. You know, there's so many different facets and sub facets of this conversation. But I've droned about it for like 50 minutes, and that's generally about where I cap my like core subject. And so I think I'm gonna cap it at that and transition. And we'll transition into your questions. You can tell probably that I'm not a deep level expert in this stuff. Like, you know, I couldn't tell you how a lithium iron phosphate battery retains 80% of its charge over the course of 10 years. I couldn't tell you the science behind that, or the electrical, you know, setup behind that, or anything like that. That's for the Telegrams of the world, right? But I can tell you like the product comparison between the two and my experience with it, and you know what this technology has to offer versus competitors on the market. So I tried to do what I could, and I hope some of you guys consider it genuinely. You know, I hope you consider all these various elements or whatever is within your price range. or whatever's relevant to your tank size. But I think the creatures that we have in our tanks, just as my last word on this before I transition off of it, even if you have a nano tank with like a couple of clownfish and like a smattering $200 worth of coral, right? Like, I still think that like the Reef Dork $75 backup battery unit, like, don't those fish deserve that? Don't those corals deserve that? Don't you deserve the peace of mind of knowing that's on there? Or the, if you don't want to quite spend 75, you can get 8 or 9 hours on a 5-watt device from the Smart Key Energy SKE lithium battery that I've got on my nano tank. Like, there are now, again, in recent weeks, months, last couple years, there are so many good options that are affordable that you can have for the cost of like, for literally the cost of like a mid-tier coral frag to a high-end coral frag. Like, literally, you for $115, you can get this EcoFlow unit. For $50, you can get a little lithium, unit that you can run a 5-watt pump on for 9 hours. Like, there are options that are undeniable. And like, basically, if you don't get these options and you just sit there and like watch your fish die in dead water and watch your coral shrivel up in dead water, and you could have for $50 had something that took care of it, I don't know. I don't know. I couldn't justify it to myself, right? I'm not pointing fingers at anybody or playing the blame game or, trying to guilt you. It's just that it would be very difficult for me to justify knowing what's out there. So I want to tell people what's out there so that, hopefully people who do not have really any kind of extensive disaster mitigation plan ready to go, you guys can kind of think about this more and just say, okay, a couple of those things I could do. Any progress is good. Having just extra salt is good. Having just an air stone is good. Any progress is good, right? So the animals deserve it. They just do. And it could be the thing that keeps you in the hobby instead of you washing out of the hobby completely. And I want more people to stay in the hobby. I really do. All right. Questions from you guys. So, again, some of these questions probably related to planning. So I apologize. That's a topic I told you guys I was going to do. I didn't do it. So, let me take a drink here as I like pick one of these. Okay. Cole Herman or Herman. You'll have to tell me at some point, man, or I'll just keep saying Herman or Herman. What are some of the corals that I grow best? He asks. What are some corals I've never been able to grow and my favorite bang for buck coral? So I think I've touched on some of these in the past, what in videos or on these, but coral I'm best at growing, I would definitely say LPS. And I mean, you guys can see even from here, my LPS coral is doing pretty darn well. Like, I never have really had a problem with growing LPS coral. I can keep SPS coral alive. And I guess I do have, my SPS frags are showing growth. All of them are officially showing growth as of now. So I've, and you can tell probably, I haven't done like a monthly update for next month yet, but like I repositioned some of them and they're doing better. So like, I'm actually seeing growth on SPS. So like, I can't say I'm bad at SPS. It's just that I'm better at LPS. SPS just takes a long time to get underway, but I'm looking forward to having all of them like really feel at home and like encrusted and start to actually show some serious, signs of growth that like are noticeable month to month. But I can definitely notice growth. I can definitely see and encrusting bases and stuff like that. So that's good. Corals I've never been able to grow. Softies. I don't know why. I know that most people can grow softies in a mud puddle with table salt. I know that. I just can't. For whatever reason, no matter what I've done, I've tried different tanks, I have tried different lights, I have tried different salts, different placement, different flows, different everything. I've watched every video on softies that the internet had to, up until a couple years ago when I was still trying it. And I just gave up, guys. Like, I don't know. It's so funny. This there are so many, I used to golf, and there are so many connections between golf and like how, like, you know, somebody might have their driver going really good and their irons are, you know, spot on. And it's right about that time that their putting goes or their chipping goes. You know, you can never get all of it. You can never get the putting, chipping, you know, iron game and driver all at once, you know, like you, that's for the pros. Like nobody else can achieve that. And like, that's how I feel about reef keeping. Like I get these three things just firing on all cylinders. And then I get this one cylinder that just falls out of the bottom of the car. Like, oh man. Yeah, I gave up on softies, to be honest with you. I have one softie in this house, and it's a Zoa that my kid chose for her nano tank, and it's surviving. It's not growing, it's just surviving. So I don't know. Favorite bang for buck coral? I know it's not a popular choice, but and I sing their praises a lot. But honestly, Duncan coral. I think Duncan coral is like one of the greatest filler corals in this hobby. Like it just, you know, they might, like, if you look in the dead center of my tank right now, for audio listeners, I'll describe. I've got, it's my oldest coral, this Duncan right there, dead center. And right now, for audio people, like, there's a little section in the middle that's, like, just not happy today, but the rest of it is happy. That's one of the cool things about a Duncan once it grows out. Even if it's having a bad day, which, like, you know, it happens from time to time, a coral, just part of it doesn't have a good day. What's cool is that like the Duncan still looks good because there's so many like little heads that eventually grow off of it that part of it can be mad. A fish can run into part of it and like scare the polyps in, but the other half of the coral is still out. So it never like totally, at least in my experience, the whole coral never totally looks bad. So also they're cheap for like bang for buck. Yeah, they're dirt cheap. Like you can get a nice frag of Duncan for like $20, a really nice frag. So yeah, big proponent of Duncan's. Beautiful movement on Duncan's. So Fritos. What a name. Fritos chips and then free toes, TOES. Fritos. People are so funny. I have two reef tanks and they're thriving, but I've been a little confused on whether to use a bag of Purigen every month or a bag of carbon. So far, I'm using Purigen and everything is great, but I know carbon is a great safety net. Just want to hear my opinion on it. So, my opinion is kind of irrelevant because I'll be perfectly honest with you. I've never run carbon on a reef tank. I have never run Purigen on a reef tank. Like, eat my most. Like when I go simple, like the only media I've ever run on a tank that is like some kind of active media that does something is what's it called? NIOS Fozzy X, which I run in a NIOS torque reactor on this tank in front of you. I've never run even phosphate reducing media on any other tank that I've ever had. Seriously. I don't run carbon. I don't, you know, I don't do like the bags of whatever you know, I know that there's bags of stuff that are all different kinds of brand names from like Seachem and stuff like that, like Purigen. I think there's other things that you can put it. I don't know, guys. Like I never could get into like the media and like targeted, like purposeful media game like some reefers do. Some people I just feel like are like these, you know, mad scientists with different like reef media products. I just, you know, I only put Fozzy X on this tank because my phosphate was really starting to inch up to a point that I could see significant polyp retraction on my acro frags. And I was like, okay, you know, it was at like whatever, 0.17. And I was like, all right, like it's been up here for a while. I should probably just, you know, start controlling this. And now it hovers between like 0.06 and 0.1. But that's it. Like that's as deep into media as I really am interested in going, at least right now. So I'm sorry for the kind of bad answer on that. Thoughts on Miracle Mud? Do you have any experience with it? No, I haven't been in the hobby long enough to have like. Here's my understanding of Miracle Mud. I think who was it? Mark, like Reef Builders Mark, Jake Adams' friend, right? I think Mark might use Miracle Mud. Jake and Mark talked about it on a reef on a reef therapy episode a long time back. And maybe they were at an old school reef keeper's house who was like, oh yeah, I still have this tray of Miracle Mud down in my sump. And it's my understanding that isn't Miracle Mud like somebody's going to reply in the comments and explain it better or explain it properly. I think it's like some kind of, you know, substrate that has like organics in it, like this biologically rich substrate, organic substrate that you put it in like a dish or in like a tray or some kind of containment vessel, and you put it down in your sump and you let those organics interact with the water that passes through your sump. At least I think this is what I remember. This is a long time ago that I listened to this reef therapy episode. Kind of impressed with my own brain that I remember that much about their discussion of Miracle Mud. But I think that's what it is. And it's funny, like they said, don't hold me to it, that they were both unsure about whether like the reports of it being super successful were true or not, but that there were like a remarkable amount of reports that like Miracle Mud was like super beneficial. So that's interesting to me, right? I wouldn't try it myself because I don't know enough about it. And I don't think that like modern reefers know much about it from what I can tell. But interesting that Jake Adams and Mark Vanderwall both were like, you know, talking about Miracle Mud and not like completely naysaying it, at least to my memory. So let's see here. What light schedule am I running on the 25 Lagoon using the Hyperreef 100? What are some PAR readings at the intensity I'm running it at? How do I feel about the light and schedule? So I really like that light. I think Nycrew did a good job on that light. I have not one qualm with the light at all. I did have somebody recently tell me they thought that the intensity on that light was a little bit weak or something like that, but I just use a PAR meter, guys. Like, I got that Vibira, V-A-B-I-R-A, PAR meter, like aquarium-rated PAR meter. Back in, you know, when Telegram first discovered it, I snapped up one of the early units, which has, like, light sensor pads that are clear. And the new ones, as I understand it, they've run out of the proper pads, and being, like, a Chinese company that's just pumping out products, like, they basically, the pads that they're putting on it now are now, like, milky, or hazy, and it's messing with the PAR readings. So, like, Telegram has information on, like, you know, where you should, what allotment or percentage you should, like, add or subtract or whatever to make up the difference for these terrible pads that they started using on it. It's unfortunate that they started to lower the quality when they ran out of a certain, you know, piece of it that was necessary to make it function with accuracy. But anyway, I've got that Vibira unit, which was, what, 150? Don't hold me to it. I think it's $150. Still the, like, best cheap PAR meter that I think you can probably get, especially since there's, you know, been Telegram work done where you can, you know, put like a percentage on it to get the accurate light reading, even with the improper pads that they're installing on it right now. All that said, that was all a mouthful. People who think those lights are weak, I just use my PAR meter and I'm getting, like, you know, 250 PAR up higher on the SPS coral in that 25 Lagoon, and then like 150 down low, 100, like maybe 100 in the corners. Yeah, it's been working fine. I really like that light. It's totally adjustable with the controller. And yeah, I'm impressed with the appearance of it. And I don't think I've only heard the fan kick on like once or twice. I mean, like, it's got pretty good heat. It seems to have good heat distribution, at least, because, you know, I don't hear the fan coming on nearly as much as it does on my AI Prime 16 HD. So, let's see here. Mike Lemming, good friend Mike, if you could do it all over again, money aside, would you go full Apex again or try something different? Considering product quality, like when I touch and feel a product, a dry product, I don't really, like, I'm weird about this. When it comes to product quality, if the product is going into my tank, do I care if, like, a Powerhead or Wavemaker Like, if the housing of it feels kind of flimsy when I put it in the tank water, no. Because, like, all products get weaker that are in contact with salt water anyway. And, like, if it works and it's a good price point, I just don't find myself, like, caring that deeply, right? However, when it's a dry product, a product that, like, I'm gonna touch it dry and I think it should, like, be a quality thing and hold its quality because I'm, like, putting it in a protected side cabinet or something, yeah. Like, it bothers me when I touch, like, an EB832 power bar. For a Nept for the Neptune Apex, and it's like squeaking and like I can feel it giving under my finger. Like those are electrical components. Like this thing should be better built. Like I just, especially for the price, they're so expensive. So yeah, like I have a definite bone to pick with Neptune over like the quality, the build quality of their products. And I would definitely go GHL if I had to do it again. I really would. Like I have come to appreciate the fact that hardware is forever and software can be changed tomorrow. So, like, if you don't like the software of something, understand that it might get better over time. So, and then last, good friend Cloppy, do you think people should go into the hobby with a goal in mind instead of just accumulating coral and gear and ending up with a Frankenstein project? Freshwater hobbyists do this with biotopes, breeding projects, etc. Short answer, yes. Long answer, since my neighbor's weed whacking like right outside the door right now, and this is the last question. Long answer, Cloppy, is going to come in the planning episode because that is actually great, great quality fodder for me to get into in the planning episode. But yeah, guys, this one's a little shorter than usual. I'll cut it short because like this weed whacker is like going crazy outside. But yeah, I wanted to do some disaster mitigation talk today. I really badly, especially considering the relevancy of that conversation in conjunction with EcoFlow having this insane sale on their official eBay store for that River 2 base power station with a lithium iron phosphate battery in it. You guys should get it. Stop buying the Ecotec Marine backup battery. Please go get the EcoFlow and then come back and talk to me about it. I could talk about. But I'm so interested in backup battery solutions and disaster mitigation stuff now. Like I'm getting so deep into that part of my like gear obsession and like learning more every week about it. I would kill to be able to talk to you guys about that more and more. So all right, guys, that's what I had for you this time. And I so appreciate all you guys listening to this. I see that people are listening to this like all over Europe and we've got Canadians, you know, our friends to the north listening in and all over coast to coast in America. I get little like regional tags when people like listen to the podcast on audio, and I can't believe like how many people have tuned into this from all over the world. It's absolutely crazy. It's super flattering, and I'll be honest with you, it's kind of intimidating, guys. Like it really is. It's like, you know, I am, like I said at the beginning, I don't claim to be an expert in anything. And I've got people listening to me, and I'm just an average reef keeper who loves to talk about reef keeping, but I would never trust myself to like give you deep biological advice or electrical advice or like, or take my word for so many things in this hobby. But I think we do have enough like podcasts and reef shows and talk events that happen that are with experts, and like maybe there is some middle ground for like just another reefer to talk to you about their experience and like, you know, what they're seeing from like this level where we all kind of like share this average reefer ground together. And that's like, again, hence the name of the podcast. This is kind of a thing for us. And it's as much for me as it is for you guys because I just love doing this and talking to you guys, having awesome discussions and debates in the comment sections. Like it absolutely makes my life better and more full. So, thank you all for your support. I truly mean it. Have a good one, guys.